Welcome to Cascade Church Podcast,
a church we hope is both safe to be and safe to grow.
Enjoy!
It is lovely to see you all. I always enjoy when I come here to see which side more people like to sit on. And you won this morning. Good job. But the Bible says the first shall be last, so bummer for you. You win. That's how church works. All right. My name is Kurt. I'm a co-pastor here at Cascade, and we have been having a series this whole month on polarization, conflict, different kinds of ways that we either have internal polarization, we have difficult conversations and relationships with people in our lives, with coworkers, with family members. Maybe you've had a polarized relationship with a church, an entire community of folks that you have been a part of, where you feel now on the other side of that. That feeling where, and we use polarization. One of the metaphors that I've thought of to conceptualize it is that magical moment in elementary school when you find out that magnets, like, usually attract, but sometimes with the opposite ends, they repel. And no matter how hard you push, you cannot get those things together. That can be a sense and a feeling that we have in relationships over certain subjects with people in our lives, that no matter what we do, there's always this force pushing us apart to different sides of the equation. And so something we like to do here at Cascade from time to time, especially as we kind of come to the conclusion of processing and thinking about a subject as a church, is we like to have a couple of folks from the congregation come as a panel and just kind of share some of their experiences. Locate some of this with just the lived experiences of folks that are a part of the congregation like you all. And so we're excited this morning to have three folks. We had four, but he broke his ankle. And so he's not here today. We prayed for healing. No such luck. Just a boot. So a slow miracle is what we call that. That probably wasn't appropriate. I'll regret that later. So I'm going to invite up, and would you welcome, we're going to have our panelists come on up, and I'm going to let them, they're going to introduce themselves here in a second, but would you welcome them? It's a brave and amazing thing they're doing. All right. And as we grab a seat, so we end the suspense, we'll start over on this end, but I'd love if you could share your name and how long you've been at Cascade.
My name is Harriet Congdon, and I've been here for 8 years, about a year after Cascade started.
I'm Kendra, and I've been at Cascade for, I think, 3 years, mm-hmm. Ballpark.
Yeah.
And my name's Andrew. I have been at Cascade for a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We really did it. The whole spectrum of attendance. We're very excited about that. And so the second question for you all is, when you think about conflict or polarization, what's your appetite for conflict? So do you move towards it? Do you avoid it at all costs? Or do you engage it when it feels necessary?
Am I going to always go first on this? Because I don't. Okay.
That's how it worked out. Yeah.
Okay, well, I tend to run towards it, and that's why I tend to get in trouble a lot.
Yeah. I hate conflict. Yeah. And pretty much only
Same.
Engage under duress.
I, like Kendra, also really do not like it.
Yeah. We'll make you fight by the end of this conversation, the two of you. Yeah, yeah. I love it. So one of the things about the conversation as we go today is usually how we do panels, too, the transparency of it is we send these questions out to folks a week or so in advance so they can be able to think and process through that. And when I emailed them to Kendra, Kendra is like, I have nothing to say. But then had a lot of brilliant insights in explaining she had nothing to say to the question. So we have some specific questions for Kendra, because she's a therapist. And so there's a specific lens that she has on this conversation I think is incredibly helpful. So Kendra, one of the things that you are sharing is that in your practice as a therapist, you practice neutrality. And so I'm interested, what have you learned about that?
I'm a huge fan of Call the Midwife. Anyone? Okay, some nods, yes. In one of the earlier seasons, there's a scene in which an abandoned baby is left at Nanada's house, and all the nuns are talking about it, and one of the younger nuns is saying, like, how could someone do this, kind of judging the mother. And Sister Julianne, who's one of the older nuns, ever wise, she says, I have learned that there are only ever two reasons for doing anything. One is love, and the other is fear. It would appear that both were at play here. And I love that perspective, and I really try, when I sit down with a client, especially one that I know is different than me, I really try to keep in mind that the motives here are love and fear for all of us all the time, and it helps me access empathy for someone that I really see as doing the best that they can with what they have. And so it's not easy, but I do think that that mindset helps me a lot in clinical work.
And so with that, I'm curious for you all, as we're talking about polarization and your experiences, what is an experience that you have working through polarization where it's felt painful or maybe even unresolved?
Eric, I will relieve you of your first step here. but I had to think for a second. Give me 5 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I'll go.
I was about to go!
Oh, okay, never mind.
Leaving space for silence. I have recently changed my identification as a person to queer rather than gay. And I did that because I noticed how white the gay world is. And I think the point of polarization comes across when I'm noticing a difference of how I'm looked upon, how I'm treated in environments that I wish I had full belonging. And what's more difficult about it is that because discrimination laws are so ironclad now, it leaves very little space for people to overtly discriminate, but it leaves a lot of space for people to discriminate under the covers, under the table. And I end up seeing that in the form of how long people hold eye contact with me and kind of seeing just the difference between how others look upon me and how others look upon each other who look similar to one another. And it's a recent development for me, so it's still something that's come across as raw. I no longer go to similar places that I used to find a lot of joy in. And I'm going to leave it at that because there's more, but that's a later question.
Thank you.
In following up to what Kendra talked about, love and fear, I was in a situation in seminary as an intern at this church where the pastor felt threatened by me, and we were in constant conflict, and I didn't know if it was because I was a woman, you know, in leadership, but I mean, he asked me to be his executive assistant, I guess, to help him, and that, so I thought I was in a helping role, and I loved this man. He was a great pastor, but there was a dark side to him, and we were in constant conflict, and finally, when I wanted to give up, the person who oversaw the internship program at the seminary said, you need to find out why before you quit.
And so I found out by asking him, you know, what's going on? What's behind all this for you? And he thought I was trying to get rid of him as a pastor, which played the fear. You know, he was from the fear side there. And so we had to talk that through before we could go forward. Otherwise, I would have had to quit. So that is powerful to figure out, is it love or is it fear? And then there was another situation more recently. Family members that were important to me, that I love, you know, this relationship was important. They were good in town for a visit, but they could not accept my grandchild, who was working through gender identity, had changed pronouns and names, and they would not accept that. They could not, from the point of their perspective, and so they could not come into our home. As a result, I had to make some tough choices, and so I, because they had kids that loved this grandchild, and so and vice versa. But I had to tell them, the one living with us, that didn't tell them at all they were in town. So we went to them to, I had to find this compromising space where we could go to them, enjoy their relationship, but no, they could not engage the family that was living with us. And so yeah, that was tough.
And then the hope is, as they share and process, you're able to also process on your own experiences as much as you're able to. What are those places that are unprocessed? And then also following up with the next question. Sometimes when we have those polarizing relationships, we're able to work through the polarization for ways that feel helpful or healing. And so I'm curious for you if you have any experiences of that.
For me, the polarization was turned inward for myself. Because when I notice I look different, I'm in a city, I mean, I'm in a country where I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Taiwan. I grew up in a place where a population looked just like me. And I grew up in a culture where most of the advertisements would feature white people. And there was an ideal and a certain favor that being in an environment like this one, it became more apparent that I was still following that. And what was healing was I began to look at my own identity and become more intentional about finding others who were like it. One recent example was I found at Reed College that there were students who were in Chinese language major programs, but also there's different international houses where each house is required to have a native speaker in each language. So I think there's a German house and there's a Chinese house. And we played Mahjong Friday night and we had a lot of fun. And we got to speak Chinese. We got to do something that was culturally Chinese. And things just felt lighter after such activities of noticing, okay, I'm different and I need to follow that. I need to follow who I am and what I speak and how I act and what my things are and who my people are. And finding strength in that has been a pretty interesting new part of my journey here.
Thank you.
In the last question, I was going to say, talk about the fact that the last five churches, and I've only been at five churches, three of them I had to flee because of conflict. I had to leave. And so there was this one, though. There was one experience at one of these churches that I ended up having to leave. But at the beginning, they were proposing a policy that John and I just did not agree with. And it came up in a public meeting. And when they presented it on paper, John and I just looked at each other and say, okay, do we say anything and get in trouble again? You know, I was like, oh, I don't want to go through this again. And but as the evening went on, it was obvious that it was a polarizing issue. A lot of people were either afraid to say something or did, but were trying to be respectful of the elders. And I just had to say something. And all I said was, I'm having trouble with this thing. And they did a good job of saying, oh, okay, because they knew me enough to know that maybe I had something to say that was important. And so they said, well, meet with me. And they actually then invited me to the elders' meeting to present why I had struggled with this. And they were very respectful. They heard me. And then they just dropped it. The next week, they dropped it. And so I felt like, oh, this is the first time I've had an experience with an elder meeting that actually was, I was treated well, and they dropped it, and because there were a lot of people who were against it, so that was it. And then just recently, last fall, I went to a high school reunion, met up with some friends who knew me as a brand new Christian in a Southern Baptist church, very conservative. So that's where I came from, okay? Very conservative. Women were not in leadership. And then I am not there, obviously, today. But it was 49 years of that journey, okay, of coming to where I am today. And it was painful. My story is painful, but I'm so happy where I am right now. But this classmate started asking questions about my journey because she was with me in that youth group, and then we hadn't had contact for years. And she wanted to know. And just 2 months ago, she wrote me an email and said, you know, thank you for sharing your story. I have changed my mind. And that was so affirming. And it's always great when you're able to share in a way that people change their mind about their position. So that was healing.
Yeah. And I appreciate so much that external polarization that we feel, and then also what you shared, Andrew, that internal polarization, which sometimes doesn't go named, that we feel inside of ourselves. I'm interested, Kendra, for you, you had mentioned that with a lot of these polarizing topics and issues, and especially with how social media works and the sense that I have to have a stance and a decision on everything, that there's kind of a pressure to have strong opinions. And sometimes we don't feel permission to say, I'm not informed on that. I wonder if you could speak a little bit towards that and how you've seen that kind of manifest itself.
Yeah, I heard Portland referred to one time as having a really great bumper sticker culture because we love to label ourselves and be like loud and proud about our opinions. And I mean, that's great. I love living here for a lot of those reasons. I do think that sometimes we've created a social climate in which it's really hard to step up and say, I don't know, or I need more information. Can you tell me more about that? Or I was wrong. That's really hard to say. So we've made it hard to have, like, to have an open mind almost, and we've made it really easy to label other people, which is so dangerous. One of the best ways to kill community is to create that dynamic of us and them and labeling them and labeling me. So it just creates like this minefield of if I say something wrong, it's really gonna, you know, bite me. And I think that we could do a lot better at just welcoming everyone to the table without judgment for wherever they are. And then it helps all of us form our own opinions that are really true to what we believe and congruent with who we are. So,
which is helpful that the tendency to say, oh, shoot, I know where most of the people I want to hang out with, what they believe on this issue. So I will say that thing, even if we don't know. And the bravery maybe saying, I don't know, as an antidote to the amount of polarization that we have around us. I'm curious for Harriet and Andrew, are there any other insights or learnings that you've had about polarization or how it's worked in your life?
I having had a lot of personal as well, experiences, it's just trying to gauge whether a situation is something in which this issue, this polarizing issue, can be treated as a third person in the room, and that everyone involved can look at it objectively and critique it or, you know, talk about it in a way. And sometimes gauging that is really hard. You have to figure out what's going on, what's the dynamics there. And I'm not always that great, so it's been a long learning curve process for me. Two pieces of advice that I got. One happened, remember this pastor I had conflict with. It did not end well a few years later. We ended up in mediation, professional Christian mediation, and it did not go well, and I had to sign a document. We both signed a document, never, ever having contact again, ever. And that was hard to accept, the fact that, and it took me a process of coming to the point of being able to forgive, but realize we were not going to reconcile. And I asked the, because the pastor left, and I asked the mediator, what went wrong? What's one of the core things that went wrong? And he said this to me. He said, people were making assumptions. And I realize, and I think, yeah. So one of the things I try to remember, it's not easy, don't make assumptions, to ask good questions, to realize that, yeah, to not assume what they mean by a certain word, to not assume this is, what they're... And some people may be pretty extreme on one end and really passionate, and they're not going to ever change their mind, so I just don't engage. There are others who are in the middle, and they're actually, this is what they believe, but they're starting to open up, and you won't know that unless you ask some questions, you know. And then the other thing is, don't take it personally. And I really think the pastor, I was a trigger for him, not because it was actually about me. It was about whatever was playing or the tapes he was listening to, the experiences he had. I just triggered things in him. And so I had to quit taking it personally as well. And sometimes that's it. And by not making assumptions, you find out, you know, what's their story? What's the story behind why they believe what they believe or feel and things like that? So that's been helpful.
Thank you.
Harriet, thanks. Hearing you here speaking about it, just kind of just processing it for myself as well. I think what that really adds to for me is that I feel like for me, the work that I do is very relational. I know that we're wired for connection, and we're wired for community, and we're wired for finding a path of nourishing one another and creating that atmosphere to do so. What's really sticking with me is the church's tagline of being safe to be, safe to grow. Because in my thought about not even necessarily overcoming polarization, but understanding it, comes from a requirement of safety, a requirement of both parties, me included, me and another counterpart, finding a way to safety when the stakes seem really high, that there is high threat in the conversation. And I think the heat happens when the safety doesn't exist. And it takes immense work to create that safety. And I feel like that might be one of those pieces that are missing within society, where it's not really being taught, it's not really being valued, in my own opinion. Which is why, I mean, being a city of bumper stickers, having a strong opinion, and wanting to be loud about it, and over, and speaking over others, it feels like a hope that others would convert to your side, when really, in what I've learned in my life, finding a path to one's own side, it starts with having a sense of understanding of where they're coming from. And that's how I personally view empathy. It's being less about running everything someone else says through my filter of my own personal life, and much more about what is this individual dealing with? Do they have fear in what they're saying? Are they feeling like something is at stake? Why is it so at stake? What means so much about them about this particular issue? And being really creating that space for that individual. And that's almost going to the space of being therapeutic, of being neutral, but really, I think for me, that's in the work that I do, and I won't make it public access here, but what I do, I mean, I need to make that space, because people are of so many different particular opinions and backgrounds, but what the core is, and I think Kurt will touch upon this and tie it up, but there's a desire to belong, there's a desire to exist, and to feel like one is nourished and thriving. And I have a hunch that returning to that place of finding a way there, I think we may look at conflict and polarization a little bit differently. But it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm curious for you, Kendra, as a therapist, you've helped people work through polarized relationships in their own lives. What insights have you gained from that process and that position in there?
Yeah, I feel like I just need to say, I know that there are probably people in the room who have either had to make choices that severed relationships in their lives, either with close family or close friends or family, or they've been on the receiving end of those decisions. And that pain is not something that those of us who haven't gone through the experience, we don't get it. So I just need to like name that and even just sit with that. It's awful. So that said, I've worked with a lot of people on the receiving end of harsh boundaries and on the, you know, ones that have had to make those strong boundaries as well. And a few things that I think are helpful for everyone. Really working hard to identify our values, where we stand, really working hard not to compromise those, working to avoid situations, relationships, whatever, that cause us to compromise our values. I also think, maybe not immediately, but when I've worked with clients more long-term, it can be really helpful to think through, okay, under what circumstances would I be okay in a relationship with this person? Like, what would that need to look like for me? What do I need if I'm going to be around them, kind of thing? Because the reality is life throws people together. It really does, especially with family members. It could be an illness. It could be a death in the family. It could be an aging parent. And sometimes you do. You're going to find yourself in those places and spaces. And I think it can be helpful to think through, like, what do I need before you get to those points of crisis? Because they're inevitable. And we want to be able to come to those with our strong self forward versus, the scared, hurt part of ourselves. So.
So helpful. Thank you, Kendra. So we're going to do two things now. The first is we like to use these conversations and other people's stories, which we so appreciate Harriet and Kendra and Andrew, you all sharing, that I hope it brought something up for you. Maybe a story that they shared that connected with one of your own stories. And so we want to create space and service for you to be able to talk about those and share those with one another, either to process it internally, or what we do is we usually at Cascade, we have people turn around just to people around you. No group is too small or too big, but just be able to make sure everyone's included who wants to be included, say hi, say a name, and then be able to process, was there a story that was shared that brought something up for you or you thought of? But there was one of Harriet's stories about family members and setting boundaries. Reconciliation, having a conversation with someone years later when you've changed an opinion and finding that as well. Maybe something that Andrew shared about internal polarization and how you've worked through that. Messages you've received and kind of the world you're around. Or insights that Kendra shared about bumper sticker culture or having strong opinions or not knowing or how do we negotiate or set those boundaries with folks. And so we want to create just a couple minutes for you to talk. And right before we do that, we want to say thank you to these brave folks for being willing to come up here and do that. So would you thank Harriet and Kendra and Andrew?
Thanks for listening.
We hope you're able to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. in person.
Have a great day.